I am a sharer, so most of what I'm going to be doing with you is really just sharing things from my life and stories and things that mean a lot to me. I do want to tell you before I forget, and it's not on your tape sheet, I have given a series of 6 tapes to the church called Love Song, and they're from the Denton Bible Church, Tom Nelson, if you're familiar with him. They're on the Song of Solomon, but the whole thing, I mean, to me, Song of Solomon was all just physical, you know, and it was exciting to hear his tapes and see what all was involved in the ramification of marriage through the Song of Solomon. And these tapes are so outstanding, we're going to take some couples through them for the next 6 weeks at home. And so I brought a set down and gave them to your church, and if you want them, you can order them from them. And there's another tape called The Principle of Receiving, and I'll be referring to it briefly, and it will be available, and it is literally a life-changing tape. And I would really encourage you to either, if the church, you know, loans tapes out or something, but I would encourage you to listen to those tapes because they are bar none wonderful. So we wanted to make them available to you. But wanted to just sort of share with you that some years ago, Mike and I were getting ready to do a marriage workshop, and we had to have some pictures taken for publicity. And we went in and had the pictures taken, and when I went back to several days later to get, check the copies, pick out the pictures, this gal just burst out laughing. When I came in, you sort of wonder if your skirt's on backwards or what the problem is. And I looked at her and she said, pardon me, but she said, when you and your husband came in several days ago, she said, I thought you all were an engaged couple. She said, I never dreamed you were married. You know why she didn't? Because of the way we treated each other. And this has happened to us 3 times out in public. You know, and that people have commented to us on that. And, of course, the first reaction is, well, this is a wonderful compliment, really, to us, but it is a sad commentary on marriage. Have you ever noticed when you're out eating, you can generally pick out the couples who've been married a while? You know, and unless he belches or something, it's maybe the only communication that they have. or he may say pass the salt or something like that. And then you see these couples that are just sitting there practically drooling all over each other, and she can't take her eyes off of him, and he can't take his eyes off her. And they just communicate and share, and the dinner gets cold. And you remember those wonderful times? Guys, I really want you to know, I believe that's what God intends for marriage now. Courtship does not end at the altar. Courtship needs to continue all through marriage. And I really feel it is the gal's place to make the husbands want to continue courtship. We really need to encourage that, and all of us really have a heart for that. Matter of fact, I was Titus woman from Mops for a couple of years at our church, and I put a little talk together on romancing your marriage, and they decided to call it Naughty But Nice, and we're really publicizing it and everything. And I'll never forget the Sunday before I was to speak, and this little girl came up in the nursery. She said, oh, I can't wait to hear your talk on Naughty But Nasty. And I said, oh. And my daughter said, now, Mother, you do need to be a little naughty. You need to remember that. So I didn't bring that talk for you all today. So it's really a little bit more fun. This is a little bit more serious, but this is what God laid on my heart for you all. But I just want you to really keep in mind, attitude is really a key word. And 2 words that go along with it are choice and willingness. And you do choose your attitude. You do choose your actions. I would really like to say it's that time of the month. I can't help it. That's just the way it is. You just accept it as it is. I learned, because I really did have have difficulty as a young woman. You know, I mean, my husband knew when it was that time of the month, just the look on my face or what came out of my mouth or, you know, I mean, he might walk by and pat me and I just think it's wonderful. 5 minutes later, he'd walk by and pat me and I'd bite his hand off. You know, I just had a hard time dealing with it until I really began praying. You know, Lord, this is not of you. I mean, if I have a real physical problem that needs to be dealt with, I need to go to the doctor and get some help. And if not, God began to show me that you don't have to give in to ugly feelings. You don't have to give in to feeling bad, that you really can choose your attitude. And, you know, the example for that really, and I love it, is in Philippians 2. And it says, have this attitude in yourself, which was also in Christ Jesus, who although he existed in the form of God, did not regard equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself, and taking on the form of a bondservant, he was made in the likeness of man. The very attitude of Jesus Christ himself can literally become your attitude. And, you know, I think one of the ugliest things that was ever told me years ago is that I set, as the woman in the home, I set the attitude of the home. I set the atmosphere of the home, and I thought, oh, dear, roller coaster. You know, this was sort of how the atmosphere of my home was. But you know what? That's a truism. We gals have a real responsibility in our home, and we do set the attitude and the atmosphere of our home. And our standard really is Jesus Christ. It doesn't mean we boof. It doesn't mean that we don't go to our family and say, hey, I'm sorry. And that was something I had to learn to do. I did not grow up in a home where we said, I'm sorry. And that is something I had to learn to do with my children and with my husband, was to say, hey, I'm sorry. I blew it. And it really was no surprise to them that I had blown it. The surprise was that I apologized. But, you know, you're never too old to learn new tricks. And that's what's neat in the Lord, because it's always a growing learning experience. But I want to just sort of share something, and I'll just be sharing different things. I want to read you a little story that this came in the mail one time. It's about the gifted concert violinist Niccolo Paganini. And he was in a packed house, and he was playing this wonderful concerto, and a string broke on his violin, and it just dangled down. Well, he, of course, is a master violinist, so he just kept playing on the two strings, and or there are four strings. How many strings are on it? Okay, there are four strings. There are four strings on. A second string broke. He played on two strings. A third string broke. He finished to this packed house on one string. Well, of course, they stood and gave him this wonderful ovation, never thinking there would be an encore, and he held up his violin, and he said, Paganini in one string. And he finished playing. And what this whole point, this was really very meaningful to me, it said, there is a vivid parallel between Paganini's broken strings and the broken strings of life that each of us face. Now, that could be just a disappointment, a daily bad circumstance. It could be a rough marriage, you know, a husband who doesn't cherish you. You could name any circumstance at all that could account for the broken strings. But most of us are defeated because we remain fully focused on our three broken strings instead of the one good one that we have left. You know, I really believe that God is a big enough God that he is not limited in any circumstance. And he can salvage anything. I believe that with all my heart. The remarkable thing is, you have a choice. There's that word again. Every day, regarding the attitude you will embrace for that day. Life is 10% what happens to us, and 90% on how we react to it. There are so many circumstances in your life that you cannot change, and these are the broken strings. But you can still play on the one string you do have, like Paganini. The choice is to be defeated by our circumstances or to rise above them. God has chosen for us to live a life of rejoicing, focusing not on our circumstances, but on Him. And you know, it's real funny. I happen to think, well, no, I really happen to know I'm married to a very special man. I also happen to know he's the only one who would have put up with me for 34 years because I really have a rather difficult personality that God has rescued in many areas. But, you know, it's real funny. If I decide to focus on the negatives, I see so many negatives in him. And God showed me a long time ago that that's a wrong focus, and he began to show me the positives. Matter of fact, in the little handout that you have, if you don't do anything else, one of the exercises I want you to do, it has you go through Philippians 4:8, and it talks about looking on the things which are positive, and it has you make a list. And I did this years ago, and I am basically by nature a very critical person. If you want to know what's wrong with you, I can tell you in just 5 minutes with you. It just doesn't take me long at all. You know, my husband now is an encourager. And where he will see the positive, I'll see the negative. God is having to really grow me up in that area. It's like some of us were talking earlier. God showed me that I have a discerning spirit, and I have turned it into a negative or a critical spirit. I've taken something good that he's given me and used it incorrectly. So I really do have a heart to become encouraging. And I sat down. I always work with legal sheets of paper. And I sat down and wrote Mike's name on the top of that sheet, and I just said, God, start showing me positive qualities in my husband. And you all, I went front and back of a legal sheet of paper. And I still have that sheet of paper, and it is a treasure. We counsel a lot of couples before marriage, and boy, this is something we have them do. And then we tell them, keep that someplace where you know where it is, and when you get mad, you get off by yourself and you pull that sheet out and say, God, help me to refocus. Look at these characteristics in my husband. And if you want to know how to respect your man, that's one way, by listing the positive qualities in him and letting God constantly remind you of that. And you begin focusing on the positive instead of the negative. Focusing on the negative is not a fun way to live. Matter of fact, it's a very miserable way to live. But you need to choose to be willing to fall in love with the person you're married to. And I know a lot of people who are married who do not really love their mates. They are accustomed to them. They're used to them. You know, they're part of their lives. But to say they really love them, unfortunately, a lot really don't. And it is a choice that you make. God intends marriage to be better, not bitter. You know, think of those two words. There's one difference in the letter better or bitter, and it's the letter I. You can take a better situation and make it bitter. And I always is my problem, self-centeredness. Most of the difficulty or any time that Mike hurts my feelings, it's because I feel I have been trampled. Thank you. That's a good word. I've been walked on. You know, it's because I am having a self-centered problem. And so it can either be better or it can be bitter. It depends what I do with I, with the me in my life. I truly believe that you will never have a strong, happy marriage or a harmonious family life just as a matter of course. It does not just happen. Marriage takes more than two. I'm a firm believer in that. I believe it takes three, and that's being centered in Jesus Christ, because I know that's what changed our marriage. And it also takes more than love. It takes work. Jean talked about sweat. Marriage takes sweat. It takes a lot of learning to keep one's mouth shut. There's a little verse in Proverbs that says, set a guard over my mouth, O Lord. Keep watch over the door of my lips. Let not my heart be drawn to what is evil. You know, as a matter of fact, that was, Oh, I'm blank. I'm sorry. It's in Proverbs. I I didn't have it down, and I wasn't thinking of it. I'll try to find it for you. I'm sorry. But that was God's real way of saying shut up to me one time, because I'm one of these that I always can solve your problems for you. Bless you, by the way. I don't let you work out your difficulties. I always have the answers. And I'll never forget one time my husband saying to me, you know, I really didn't want you to solve my problem. I just wanted you to listen to me. And my initial reaction was, what do you think? Anger. Made me mad. And God said, honey, listen to him. That's all he's wanting, is just listen to him. And besides that, I don't have the answer to everybody's problem. So marriage does take work, but oh, is it worth it? It is worth every bit of time and effort you put into it. I want to read you a little cartoon. Of course, right now, better and for worse is leaving a lot to be desired, but this was from a long time ago. And I share this every time because I think it's delightful. And this is when it was really for better and not for worse. But it shows the couple in the bathroom, and she's brushing her teeth, and he's gargling his whatever with his tongue sticking out. I don't quite know how he does that without just taking a bath in it. And then you see a picture of her, and she's standing here scratching her head, and you hear the potty flush in the background. And they sit down on the bed, and he goes, oh, scratches his armpit, and she pulls at her eye. And they get in bed, and he's looking at his toes, and she's blowing her nose. And he turns to her and says, mind if I wear my socks to bed? My feet are cold. And he lies down and takes off his glasses, and she goes, oh, darn, I keep forgetting to mend the nighting. The whole armpit's out of it. And just as an aside, ladies, nightgowns from here to here to here. They are really a no-no. I will never forget one day coming home with the prettiest, feminine, lovely, here, to here, to here nightgown. And my husband took one look at it, and he said, take it back. I will keep you warm. I took it back. And he keeps me warm. But keep your underwear, your nightgowns in good repair. And if they need to be sexy, you know, then that's wonderful. I remember, bless Mike's heart, one of the first nightgowns he bought me was a black, sexy nightgown. And it was probably made for someone who wore a 39D cup, I think. And I wasn't quite in that category. And besides that, I'm very short, you know, through the get along. And I had to really do a lot of repair to it, but I wore it. I don't really think I was the picture of sexiness, but he thought it was wonderful. But anyway, she has the whole armpit out of her nightgown, and she's sitting there in bed. He's yawning real big, and she's slapping goop all over her face. And then here's this blackout, and she goes, good night, honey. He goes, good night. She says, John, I think the glamour has gone out of bedtime. Which reminds me, I want to read something. Let me find it here. This was just given to me. Because this is, you have a tendency to sort of laugh at this, but it's really very tragic. And so, but I want to read it to you in light of this, because the glamour has a tendency to go out of bedtime, very definitely. I happen to love, do any of you remember way back when Mary Brill Morgan and her Total Woman? Yeah. Loved it. Absolutely loved it. Anything, she was just right up my alley, you know, and put a lot of her things into practice, and they were sure fun. One of my favorite stories about that was a woman that, and I don't think it was in Mary Brill's book, but it was through one of her radio programs or something, and so she wrapped herself in saran wrap and got on the kitchen table. She knew her husband was due home, and she was lying there in the saran wrap, and he walked in, he goes, oh no, leftovers again. Love it. I have a bizarre sense of humor. But I want to read you this letter, and I want you to listen carefully, and I'll just read it, and we'll go on from there. a letter written by a man to his wife. He says, "Dear, during the past year, I've tried to make love to you 365 times. I have succeeded only 36 times. This is an average of once every 10 days. The following is a list of the reasons why I did not succeed more often. It was too late, too early, too hot, or too cold. It will awaken the children, the company in the next room, or the neighbors whose windows are open. You were too full. You had a headache, a backache, a toothache, or the giggles. You pretended to be asleep or just not in the mood. You had on your mud pack. Do any of y'all remember when we used to go to the beauty parlor and have the hair all back combed, and we'd go to bed with toilet paper wrapped around it, and this, oh my heavenly days, I am so glad that is beyond us. That's why I have long hair, because my husband likes it and you don't have to do anything with it. You had on your mud pack, you watched the late TV show, I watched the late TV show, or the baby was crying. During the times I did succeed, the activity was not entirely satisfactory for a variety of reasons. 6 times you chewed gum the whole time. On occasion, you watched TV the whole time. Do you know I know a gal who became pregnant watching TV while her husband made love to her? Often you told me to hurry up and get it over with. A few times I tried to awaken you to tell you we were through. And one time, I was afraid I had hurt you, for I felt you move. Honey, it's no wonder that we have problems. Men do have a sexual drive. It's like I tell my husband, honey, horny young men grow up to be horny old men. It does not change. And you know what? That is good and healthy and right. And the more we learn to enjoy it with them, the more fun it is. And guys, let's try gals. try being aggressive. I mean, you may shock your husband and he may have a heart attack, but like someone said, what a wonderful way to go. You know, but we gals need to be aggressive with our husbands. I can't believe I'm getting all out of order on this. I must be thinking things. But we really do. We need to be aggressive with them. There is nothing. I know one gal that all during her married life, she dressed and undressed in the closet. Her husband never saw it. Everything was always lights out. Lights need to be on. Daytimes are wonderful. You have Mother's Day out. Have you ever thought when you have a Mother's Day out to put the children in the Mother's Day out and call your husband's home for lunch? You know, there are a lot of aggressive, suggestive, wonderful things you could do with your husbands that absolutely would make their day. And it kind of makes them want to come home, you know, real often. So, but for better or for worse. Anyway, you can read book after book on marriage. You can attend classes. You can attend seminars. You're only going to remember 10% of what you hear in this whole conference. But what are you doing with the 10% that you do hear? And the one little thing you hear that clicks with you, what are you going to do with it? That's what's going to make the difference. Allow God to take the things you hear and put them into action in your life. You can either settle for the best the world has to offer, and to really be honest, that's a real ho-hum, mundane relationship, or you can settle for the best God has to offer. I'll never forget when our daughter and her husband were getting married, they said originally to us, and thrilled us to death, they said, "We really want a marriage just like you have." And at that time, they weren't really walking with the Lord. They were Christians, but they didn't have a lordship commitment. And they got to thinking about it, and they thought, gee, that's a lot of work and a lot of effort. And they said, you know, Papa and Grandma, this is my parents, have a wonderful relationship. We'll be like them. We'll have a marriage like Papa and Grandma. And my husband was really real wise. He said, you know, and my parents, I really had a wonderful example of a marriage, even though I wasn't raised in a Christian home. But it was about as good an example outside of a Christian home that you could have had. And Mike said to our daughter and to Wes, said, you know, you can choose that and it will be good, but you will be settling for second best because God has something so much more for you. And he said, I really hate to see you miss it. And fortunately, they've chosen the best. And it's been exciting to see them walk in relationship with them. But I really want to share in light of part of the things that have changed my marriage. And the two main things have really been lordship and commitment. And you all may have heard this in other workshops, but I just want to hit upon them briefly. God's goal for marriage is to conform us, Romans 8:29, to conform us into the image of his Son. And that's why relationships are difficult, you know, because you are two, marriage is made up of two incompatible people. There is really no such thing as compatibility. We are having to learn all the time how to be compatible. Well, you can either be excited about learning and excited about growing, or you can let that old self-will come up and get in the way. But God's goal for your marriage and for my marriage is to conform us into the image of his Son. And it's a training ground to learn how to serve. That is really where we can learn to serve, and we are not really going to be fulfilled until we learn to serve. If I am expecting to be served, I'm never going to be fulfilled. Mike can never do for me all the things I think need to be done for me. You know, and what God says is, honey, you have an opportunity to learn how to serve that man. And my goal, my own personal goal, is really not to have a good marriage, but my life goal is Philippians 3:10. And I love it in the Amplified, and just the first part of it says, for my determined purpose is that I may know him, that I may progressively become more deeply and intimately acquainted with him, perceiving and recognizing and understanding the wonders of his person more strongly and more clearly. And, of course, that's my relationship with God, and God's also given me the privilege of that can be my relationship with my husband. Be a student of your husband. Get to know him. As I have really started growing and coming to know God, I find I have a greater desire to know my husband, and the more I come to know him, the more I come to love him, and the more I come to respect him. I have a man that I respect immensely. Not know about him. For years I knew about God, but I have come to know him deeply and intimately and personally. And that's what I'm doing in my relationship with my husband. And then the attitude of commitment. 2 Timothy 1:12, for I know whom I have believed and am persuaded that he is able to keep that which I've committed unto him against that day. What have you really committed to the Lord? And what commitment is just literally placing into God's keeping everything you know of yourself. And you know what the heart attitude of commitment is we will work it out no matter what it costs. That sacrifice, we will work it out no matter what it costs. And I would just have to ask you to really think through that. What have I committed to the Lord? I had to write down myself, my choices, my attitudes, my marriage, my hurts, my fears, my insecurities, my children. I mean, everything I know about myself. I can't handle it anyway. And as I learned to give it to the Lord and let him teach me how to walk day by day, I am a more fulfilled, happy person. I'm going to give you a definition of love that I think is one of the best I've ever heard. Love is a reasoned, intentional devotion of the will. It's not a feeling. It is a reasoned, intentional devotion of the will. It is an attitude. It is a choice. It's a determined effort. You know, it doesn't matter. I don't know how many times I've heard somebody say, I've married the wrong person. You know, the point is, if you're married, you're married to the right person. And the significant thing is whether you are being the right person. That's looking at the positive instead of the negative again. It isn't that I'm married to the wrong person, because if you're married, you're married to the right person, but what matters is being the right person. And that's why I have to say, God, you know, begin with me. We were talking earlier today, some of us, and one of the things, everything that you're hearing today, the starting place for you to apply it is in your home. And it's real easy for us to let our hair down and just be ugly at home with the kids, with our husbands. We just let it all hang out. And then we get out in public and, oh, we're so sweet and we're so nice and we're so loving. And I'm a performer. So, you know, I understand that theory real well. It's easy for me to perform, but at home I just want to be me. Well, God says that's fine as long as it's the me that He's creating me to be. And He says everything that you learn as a Christian, all the conferences you go to, all the books that you're reading, your starting place to apply them is in your home, foremost in your relationship with your husband and with your children. And if I am learning to be God's person in my home, applying that relationship with my husband, my children are going to benefit in a remarkable way. I love it all through Deuteronomy, and it will say if you're obedient to the Lord your God, if you love Him and walk with Him with all your heart and all your soul, it says your children will benefit by that. There are promises like that all through the Scriptures. We women have a tendency to sort of make our children our priority, and our husbands get hung up in their work. And if we make God our priority, and the second relationship is the husband-wife relationship, God takes care of the balance. Your children will benefit if you have the right priority in your life. If you put them above your husband, they will not be fulfilled. They will not be satisfied. They will actually be harmed. Well, God had to work very much in my life to bring me the position of being the right person. And I want to share, for one thing, I was hurt very badly as a teenager, and just mainly, that's why it has amazed me God's had me work with women, because I'm really basically sort of frightened of women. I have a very insecure feeling there, because I feel like men accept me and I feel like women don't. And this goes back to when I was in junior high school. And so I really call it identity crisis, poor self-image, whatever you want to call it. I really struggled with that. And, you know, I found out I couldn't really respect other people, and I really couldn't respect my husband until I learned to respect myself and the me that God was creating me to be. And God had to really start giving me His perspective. I really expected Mike to do for me what only God could do. I had some very unrealistic expectations. And I came across this article, and I just loved it, and I want to share it with you. These are what he calls some throwaway lines, and I thought you might appreciate it. And I get all worked up, and I'm going to take off my jacket, and that's as far as I'll go. Marriage is like a bathtub. Once you're in it for a while, it's not so hot. Marriage is like twirling a baton or eating with chopsticks. It looks so easy until you try it. A man is incomplete until he's married, and then he's finished. Marriage is like a midnight phone call. You get a ring, and then you wake up. And then he says, the one I like best goes like this. Marriage is like flies on a window. Those on the outside are dying to get in, and those on the inside are dying to get out. And you know, let's face it, we even in Christian marriages, the divorces are running 2-to-1. Real sad commentary for, you know, what we're supposed to be applying from what we're hearing. But I wanted to read this to you. This fellow wrote this, and he was engaged to this gal named Kathy. And before he was engaged to her, he said, he has this little quote in here. He said, you know, there are only two things that cause unhappy marriages. Now, this is real profound. Two things that cause unhappy marriages, men and women. And he said, I spent a lot of time in my waking hours before marriage constructing a model of the type of person I'd like to marry. I came up with sort of a composite of Raquel Welch, Mother Teresa, and my mom. I don't know what Kathy's model consisted of, but that was mine. And I would then go around projecting that image onto every girl I took out. Her personality and character seldom matched up. Then I found Kathy and determined she was, in fact, the woman for all seasons. So I married her. And guess what I discovered? She wasn't that person at all, but someone entirely different. Know what went through my mind? I've married the wrong person. Well, of course, if I had married anybody else, it would have been the same. Because all of us are married to a flawed, fallen, fickle creature. Now, I can sit there and I can see minds buzzing. That's really true. She knows my husband. He's flawed, fallen, fickle creature. But then God says, honey, whose mouth is it coming out of? And I think mine. And he said, you are a flawed, fallen, fickle creature. You know, we made the choices we made to the guy we're married to, so it doesn't say too much about us if we don't think very much of him. It says we've made some pretty lousy choices, or that we don't have very good time. I mean, really, the responsibility is ours when you stop and think about it. So he said, I am coming to see that a successful marriage, successful in terms of God's criteria, consists, just like we said earlier, not in finding the right kind of person, but in being the right kind of person. So God began to use his word to change my life. For one, he gave me a real sense of an identity. There, a man shared years ago, and you know, it's funny, you hear a story, and for some reason, may not mean anything to anybody else, but it changes your life. And he said, he was from Washington, and he said, let's act like we're in the Smithsonian Institute, and on the wall behind us is this magnificent picture, and it's an original, and money can't buy it. No money in the world will buy it. But, oh, you want that picture. And he said, you go out of the Smithsonian Institute and you go around the corner to a pawn shop, and there is a copy of that picture for 2 bits. And I'll never forget him leaning over and saying, don't be a 2-bit copy of what God intended you to be. And that literally began to change my life. But I was very active in drama in school because I was so insecure. It was fun to have an identity, just even for a time, you know, that I knew who I was supposed to be and could put on all these different identities. And I was afraid to be me and to like what God was doing in my life. And that really became my prayer. God, I do not want to be a 2-bit copy of what you have created me to be. I really want to be the divine original that you created me to be. There are 2 verses in Scripture that I really like. One is Isaiah 43:4, and it was God's love letter to me. This was particularly from the Berkeley version that I liked. And it says, because you were precious in my eyes, you were honored, and I love you. You know, that's pretty special when the God of the universe says that to you. And then 2 Corinthians 5:17, in the living, when someone becomes a Christian, he becomes a brand new person inside. He's not the same anymore. A new life has begun. That was good news to me. You know, a new life had begun, and I had new potential to be the person God created me to be. So God started turning my attention as he started dealing with me in the relationship with myself. Then he started dealing with me in the relationship with others, primarily centering upon my marriage. Two verses. Again, I seem to run in twos today. Psalm 101:2 in the Living Bible says, I will try to walk a blameless path, but how I need your help, especially in my own home, for I long to act as I should. I just have to ask you, do you really long to act as you should in your home? Because if you do, and if you trust God to work in your life, he will turn your home not upside down. He'll turn it right side up. I long to act as I should in my home. And then Romans 8:13, and this is a life-changing verse to me, and it's from the Phillips translation. If you cut the nerve of your instinctive action by obeying the Spirit, you're on your way to real living. And let me illustrate that by this example. I am a competitor by nature. Extremely competitive. When I was I wanted to be a little boy so badly. My name is Tommy. I was my daddy's only little boy. You know, I literally could outrun, outfight, out-wrestle any little boy all through grade school. You know, I was a horrible tomboy. My folks didn't bring me back dolls. They brought me six shooters and things like that. And I carried that over into marriage. Real unhealthy, let me just tell you that. I really challenged Mike for the leadership in our home, and I did it, honestly, because I thought I was wiser. I thought my way was really best. And that he was very fortunate to have me to straighten him up and make his decisions and run his life for him. I was not created to fill that position. No woman is created to fill that position. And matter of fact, as someone said, when you have two heads in a family, you have a two-headed monstrosity. And that's exactly where we were heading. And that is known as a big lack of respect. A big lack of respect for the man God put in my life as the head of my home, because that is his position. And so God took some scripture in my life, and he walks me through things. I'm a slow learner, but I do finally get the picture. I read Genesis 2 as the woman was made to compete with men, because that was just my nature. And one day God said, what's the difference between the two words complete and compete? And he said, it's the letter L. And he said, as long as you are competing with Mike for his rightful place in the home, you will never love him. He said, that's what's missing in your relationship. Compete and complete. You only complete him when you are loving him. And then he took me to Ephesians 5, and some of you all know this. I'm going to give it to you from the Amplified. My Bible did not open to Ephesians 5. It went from Ephesians 4 to Ephesians 6. Because I did not like Ephesians 5, and particularly in the Amplified. First part of it I thought was pretty good. It says, however, let each man of you without exception love his wife as being in sense his very own self. And I thought, right on, you know. And then God had the audacity to say, and let the wife see that she respects and reverences her husband, that she notices him, regards him, honors him, prefers him, venerates and esteems him, and that she defers to him, praises him, loves and admires him exceedingly. And I said, oh, garbage. You have got to be kidding. And he said, no, I'm really not. Matter of fact, most of the other versions will just say that she respects her husband. That's what respect involves. All those little words I gave you. If you really want a blessing, memorize that out of the Amplified Bible. And then if you really want to be daring, say, God, you know, hold on to something and say, God, help me to apply this in my life, in my relationship with my husband. It's really rather remarkable when you do that. And then God took me to Proverbs 31, you know, that horrible, perfect, ugly, hideous, obnoxious woman, you know. But there was a little verse in there, and it said, she was content to let her husband be known at the gate. Well, you know, to my competitive nature, that wasn't good news. I mean, it was fine for him to be known at the gate as long as I was known with him and, you know, got the glory and the honor and all this bit. And so God brought that home to me by one day. I do love birds. I don't know a lot about them, but I love to watch wildlife. And one day my little son and I was in preschool at the time. We were driving along and there was this beautiful red cardinal. And we were commenting on it. And all of a sudden God said, "Is that the papa bird or the mama bird?" And I said, "Well, I do know enough from my biology in college that that's the papa bird." And all of a sudden he said, "What's the mama bird look like?" And I said, "Oh, well, she's rather drab looking. She just sort of has a little color on her beak and her top knot, and she's really not very attractive." And he said, "Why is that?" And, you know, God doesn't know all these things, so he has to ask me. You know, you learn through questions, and God knows that I learn through questions, so he asked me, and we have to carry these conversations back and forth. But what it boils down to is that the birds build a nest, and it's rather drab, you know, brown, mucky color. Well, when they lay their eggs, when she lays her eggs, she blends in with her surroundings. And she protects the nest, and the papa bird in all his brilliant color, you know, all of his vividness, when anything comes around to harm his family, he draws that away. You know, he uses his brilliance to protect his home. And that God just took me back to Proverbs and said, "Who's known at the gate? Is it the papa bird or the mama bird?" Well, it's always the papa bird that you think of. And he said, "That's the way it needs to be. You need to be content to blend into your surroundings and let your husband be known at the gates." And I wrote this in my Bible back in April of 1969, ladies. With all my heart, this I believe God wants of me, to be willing to lose my identity in him and to be willing to lose my identity in Mike. Only then is God free to really use me for his glory. And that decision really changed my life. I am a freer woman today than I ever was before. But that is the process of cutting the nerve of your instinctive action by obeying the Spirit. The Spirit tells me to be willing to give the leadership to my husband, to be willing to respect him, to be willing to die to self. And he said, if you cut the nerve of your instinctive action by obeying the Spirit, then you're on your way to real living. And I never really lived until that time. Don't get me wrong, insecurities and rebellion will still raise their ugly heads, but I'm in the process of learning to make right decisions. And it's exciting. Let me give you another little verse from Amplified. It's terrific. 1 Peter 3:2, and it's the latter part of the verse. And this is your relationship with your husband. You are to feel for him all that reverence includes, to respect, defer to, revere him. Reverence means to honor, esteem, appreciate, prize, and in the human sense, adore him. And adore means to admire, praise, be devoted to, deeply love, and enjoy your husband. Do you? Do you enjoy your husband? Do you delight in being in his presence? I'd rather be with Mike than anybody I know, and I tell you what, I work out my schedule that I am with him. Of course, there are sometimes I think he thinks he can't go to the bathroom without me. I'm sort of his shadow. Our family's made fun of that. I really do let him have some privacies. But I enjoy being in his presence. I enjoy being with him. He is my best friend. He is my confidant. And that is really what God has given us as we've learned to make right choices. If you are not doing that, you are missing a real blessing. Marriage is intended to be a reflection on earth of the love relationship between Christ and his church. Your marriage is a reflection of something. Now, only you and your husband, deep down in your hearts, really know what that is. And, of course, the people who have observed you. But your marriage is going to be a reflection of something. And, you know, Jesus is the example of submission. And that's a good word that a lot of people hate because a lot of women hate because they don't understand it. But Jesus gives us the privilege. God gives us the privilege of serving as the example of Jesus Christ to the world by being submissive to our husbands. And all in the world that means is that I put myself under his authority and under his protection. And submission is voluntarily lifting another above yourself to serve him. I choose. That's really what in Philippians 2 when it talks about a bondservant. A bondservant is someone who has served 7 years as a servant and it's time for him to be released and he goes to his master and says, I love you. I want to serve you. I want to be your servant for life. And that was the first pierced ear. They took an awl and pierced his ear, and it denoted him as a bondservant. I am a bondservant to my husband, and it is the blessing of a lifetime. Voluntarily lifting another above yourself to serve him or her. You have the privilege of helping your husband reflect God's image. No one can do that better than you. Not any of the other men in his life. No one can show him the respect. No one can complete him. No one can fulfill him other than Jesus Christ himself like you can. And that is a wonderful vocation for a lady. I would just tell you to not only be a student of your husband, be on his team, be his head cheerleader. I spoke at a church some years ago, and it was just a small group of women, and it was their little evening meeting. And I sat there, I'd forgotten what I was supposed to talk on, but as I sat there and listened to them, they must have honestly all married the dumbest men who had ever walked the face of the earth. I wished I had had a recorder to record their conversation. Not a one of them. They were all talking about their husbands, and nothing was positive. Don't ever, ever, ever say negative things about your husband to other people. Don't ever do that. There's nothing wrong with going to God and say, God, I resent this, this, and this, and help him, let him help you get it in balance. But don't ever say negative things about your husband to other people, your children, and boy, what a habit that can be. You know, just little snide, little innuendos that we toss out. Don't ever, ever do that. Be his head cheerleader. You know, really love him physically, emotionally, verbally. Let him know when he... And, you know, they may be little things, but oh, so often the little things are what are so meaningful. In Proverbs, our little Proverbs 31 woman again, verse 12, it says she does him good and not evil all the days of her life. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. The tape, Principle of Receiving, I really want you all to listen to that or buy a copy. I just hope it's a good copy. We had a bunch of bad copies, and I hope I picked up the right one. But what it is talking about, and of course it's in all relationships, but what it's talking about is accepting your husband as he is. Do you want him to accept you as you are? You don't want him to try to make you over. Don't you try to make him over. Accept your husband as he is and as God's perfect gift to you, because I am here to tell you he is God's perfect gift to you. And James tells us that God is the author of every good and perfect gift. God does not make a mistake. Accept what God is doing in your life through your husband, through his faults, through his irritating habits. You know, all those things, if we look for God's perspective, it is amazing how it can change the criticism to constructive happenings. God is working in your life through your husband. He is God's way of perfecting you and bringing balance to your life. Mike and I are as opposite in personalities as we can be. And yet what is so exciting is we see God bringing us a balance. You know, it doesn't mean that my personality has been lost in him. Matter of fact, we were in Alabama last fall, or Tennessee, I guess we were in Tennessee, weren't we, last fall? And a little gal came up and I shared my testimony at a home meeting and did the marriage. And the only workshop she came to was marriage, because she was really struggling in this area. And she said, "Do you know why I can listen to you and receive what you say?" She said, "It is so obvious that you love your husband and that you respect him," but she said, "You still have your own personality. You have not lost your personality." God does not intend, you know, God loves variety. You know, he does not intend us to lose our personality, but he does blend us together to make it one. A precious little couple that lived with us for about a year and a half, we were in a marriage study with some couples, and we were talking about becoming one. And I loved her little example. She had a little preschool child. And she said what she thought of was taking blue and red Play-Doh and mixing it all together. And when you mixed it all together, it became purple. And she said that's what to her becoming one was. And I thought, oh, that's even a royal color. That's what the Bible uses as a royal color. And we're just Play-Doh. We're lumps of clay that God takes and he blends together to make us one for his own good purposes, to do his own good work in. Let me give you, I'm skipping through a bunch of this stuff, let me give you what I consider the 10 most critical words in a marriage relationship. Matter of fact, if you all know who Cliff Burrows is, these words came from him, and I think they're profound. Not very theologically, you know, heavy, but very profound. I was wrong. I'm sorry. Forgive me. I love you. I was wrong. I'm sorry. Forgive me. I love you. 10 most critical words in marriage. When we learn to get those out of our mouth, and particularly when they're coming from our heart. Now, there are sometimes we can say it just to say it, to cut all the stuff going on. But what we need to learn to do is say it from our heart. I was speaking up in Kansas at a Christian women's club some years ago, and this is probably the most profound, appropriate introduction I have ever had in my life. And I wished I had the newspaper, you know, because they always put it in their little town community newspapers. And what they had intended to put in there is that she is a perky little homemaker. Well, in print, it came out she is a pukey little homemaker. And I said, I can't believe I would have framed it and put it on my wall. I've loved that, because that was, well, what I was in the process of becoming until God started changing my life. But I want you all, in these last few minutes, I want to make you aware of the power you have in your husband's life. I don't know if you've ever thought about it, and if you have, if you were anything like me, you thought about it, but I thought about it in a manipulative, conniving way. You all are extremely powerful, more so than anybody else in your husband's life. And let me just hit some verses with you to show you some illustrations here. In 1 Kings 11, Solomon, of course, bless his heart. Here he prayed for wisdom. God made him the wisest man who ever was. And I don't know what happened to Solomon, but he had 700 wives and 300 concubines and a lot of pantyhose hanging in his showers. And he had a real problem of some kind. But it said that other nations and all his riches couldn't turn him. But then in verses 2 and 4 of 1 Kings 11, it says his wives turned his heart away after other gods. His heart was not wholly devoted to the Lord his God. Oh, I thought we had to 2:25.
When your husband said he said he wants to talk to you, I
would. Do I have to be obedient?
Yes,
thank you. And then in 1 Kings 21, it said, surely there was no one like Ahab who sold himself to do evil in the sight of the Lord, because Jezebel, his wife, incited him. And then Rebekah's, and I'll just skip through this, in Genesis, Rebekah's deception of Isaac. And then Adam and Eve, you know where it says that she took and she also gave to her husband with her and he ate. I am willing to bet you that Satan tempted Adam with whatever it was, the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And Adam withstood Satan, but he couldn't withstand his wife. You have a profound influence in your husband's life for good or for evil. So you keep that in mind. Lots of times when you want to lash back, you know, just think, I have a real opportunity here to build constructively or destructively in his life. I want to read one little thing to you, and since we're quitting and my husband says come, it's just called We Are a Family. Since before any of us were born, God planned for us to share our lives with each other. He knew exactly how our strengths and weaknesses would balance one another and the depth of love, understanding, and commitment we would learn to feel. He knew the richness of our separate characters would be developed through the hard times. Don't resent the hard times. You know, that's, if I hadn't had to leave it out, I would have told you. Just stop and think about how, what makes a pearl. You know, you have an oyster and it's something harmful getting in, and there's something in the oyster that wraps itself around this thing that's harmful, and it creates a pearl of great value. And that's what God can do with anything harmful in your life. I don't care what it is. He can make it into a treasured, priceless pearl. So he knew the richness of our separate characters would be developed through the hard times, and that mutual trust and respect would be born as a result of overcoming the trials together. He knew that we would laugh together and cry together. He knew we needed each other to hug, to help, to teach, to serve, and to love.